Warning.
This show contains mature content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
One angry New York City Puerto Rican decided to start a radio show, determined to piss the world off by shoving a mirror in front of society's face. He kicked them in the balls.
What are you? Who are you?
This is the Crotch Shot Radio Show. Crotch Shot Radio Show.
This is not a test. This is a broadcast transmission.
We're going to stay on the air.
And now, the weepy. The weepy.
Welcome to the Crotch Shot Radio Show. Today, I am honored to have comedian Elizari Castro. He is a Puerto Rican comedian. And, we're having fun. He's also, fun fact, he's a lawyer. And we'll be
That's a fun fact?
Yeah, it is.
That's a weird fact.
Actually, a weird fact would be he's a cross-dresser on the weekends. I mean, but, you know.
No, that's a fun fact right there.
Oh, really?
That would be a fun...
he plays Charo on the side, you know, for spending money. That would be a weird, like, word.
That's how I get my Christmas money.
Oh, well, there you go. So, I mean, let's just jump right into it. Like, my sister, Novi, she lives in Chicago right now. And she told me about you because I'm pursuing a comedy and a comedy and career.
You're off to a great start because that's funny. If you're pursuing a comedy and career, you're halfway there, bro.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's also because you know, I had a ex female friend that wanted me to quit my job.
Yeah, rayo. You also got drama.
Yeah.
Too. You said you got material and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got an ex female friend. That's awesome already.
Oh, dude, she friend zoned me so hard. I was pretty much a service dog for her.
Oh,
yeah.
She left you as a friend, a service dog for every other female that came after that.
Yeah.
She left a label on your forehead.
Pretty much.
Feel free to approach.
Yeah, I'll be. Yeah, just don't pet me. I'm working. I'm making sure this chick don't jump off a bridge or something. That's how bad it was. Yeah. At least I was able to go into like places that said no pets allowed. But
not bad.
So anyways, yeah, she wanted me to quit my job so that way I could do comedy full time. But so my sister told me about you are a criminal attorney.
Yeah, I started out
as
a prosecutor and
bad guy.
Yeah. Started out as a prosecutor, but and I started writing my first show as a prosecutor as a means of escape, just to get away from the hassle. And I found out after a while that even though I liked it, I didn't necessarily like the prosecutorial side of it. That's a big word, bro. Prosecutorial. Don't ask me to spell it.
Okay.
Because I was really putting away a lot of my own people. And you know, I felt like their attorneys could have been doing a better job. Y como yo me creo mejor que todo el mundo, viste, como I think I'm better than everybody else.
Yeah.
I said, you know what, I should switch sides and represent them better and take their money. So I felt it was a win-win, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, keep the money in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So I switched and I found that much more challenging, rewarding, and not just financially, but in terms of material, because my people, we give the best material ever. So that's why I developed the show Law and Disorder based on my time as a criminal defense attorney here in Orlando, Florida.
Do you still practice?
I do. I practice, but on a part-time, very limited basis. I do some criminal consultation, mostly civil, but it's touch and go. I'm not in court every day. I can't do it with all the shows and the traveling and the rehearsing and all that. So I do it on a very limited basis because I do enjoy it. I enjoy the intellectual challenge of it, right? So if I'm not on stage being challenged by my audience, I'm in a courtroom challenging other people to keep up with me.
Okay. I mean, this is probably like the answer to this question is obvious, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you find feeds your soul more, practicing law or doing comedy?
What feeds my soul is comedy, because there's a certain story that I feel needs to be told in a certain language that I feel needs to be heard in. Which is our generation, right? Our generation is very comfortable in both languages. We don't strictly watch Univision like our abuelitas and our madrinas do and our moms.
Primo impacto.
Right. That's not really us. We could dig it. If we have to, while we're babysitting our grandmother, we'll sit there and watch it. But then again, we don't really always watch BET and NBC. We exist in somewhere in this hybrid world that hasn't really catered to us. So I'm trying to feed that that market that has been long neglected. I feel like I'm holding a rally.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
I hear you. I'm right here. I'm paying attention. I'm going to start taking notes. This is like a college course right now.
We need to pass out flyers at the end of the show.
Yeah. Arriba, abajo, manolo yankee pa carajo. Wait, what? Oops, did I just... Uh-oh, Young Lords.
Cuidado.
Get Homeland Security in there like, oh, word? Okay.
I got a clean record. Don't mess it up.
Yeah. So you got started in comedy to basically challenge yourself, and you were just... Did you just, like, feel, like, zapped inside just practicing law, and it was like you needed an extra outlet?
Yeah, because, you know, I did the law degree for my family. My family insisted that I become somebody, period. Just somebody. Yeah. Anybody. So they wanted me to be a lawyer, and I did that. I gave them the diploma. I gave them the degree. I gave them the profession. And then it was time for me to do, you know, what made me happy and to fulfill that need that I felt, like I said, that needed to be fulfilled, which is entertainment for the kind of bicultural, bilingual family que has always been ignored. ¿Entiendes?
Yeah. So, did you go through the same thing that I went through, like, when I told my family I wanted to pursue stand-up comedy? They're like, cuidado, you know, be careful what you say, you know, you can't talk about this, you can't... They started putting rules, even though they don't understand how comedy works.
If that's how your family reacted, you're lucky.
Oh, really?
I told my family I was going to do that, and they were like, qué porquería, tú no sabes nada de eso. What do you know? Cálmate, okay? You're not that funny, right?
Oh, yeah, no.
Which is why haters have never really fazed me, because I was raised around them, you know? In my family, if you said you wanted to do anything outside of the norm, you were, you know, classified as not good. You know what I mean? Mira, I was thinking of being an artist. You're going to be an artist. You're not going to be the worst. Tú no sabes nada de eso. Why don't you be blank, and then you'd have to do what they say so that you wouldn't be criticized? So when I told them that's what I wanted to do, they simply said no, because I think it's partly out of ignorance, right? They don't know anything about that. I want to be a comedian. And to them, a comedian is putting on a clown outfit, putting some makeup, and blowing balloons at a kid's birthday party.
Either that, or why don't you be like a Chapulín Colorado, or...
te quieres ser un Don Francisco. ¿Qué es eso? Mira, ya Don Francisco existe. Okay. Oh, what, did he die? You want to replace him? No. Why don't you be a lawyer? So after a while, you know, you just to stop them from criticizing, you do what they say.
Yeah, just to, like, shut them up. You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Yeah, no. I mean, I get it all the time. I mean, that's why, you know, I pretty much do this, you know, as a defiance. Like, go to open mics. In fact, do you do open mics? Do you, like, practice your stuff? Or, how do you prepare for a show?
I started doing open mics in the beginning because that was the conventional way, right? But I'm unorthodox, you know. I'm very unconventional.
Oh, you're Jewish too.
I write one man shows. So what I do is, technically, the way you're supposed to do it is you develop 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and you put it all together. You got an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Pero como yo soy medio bruto, yeah. I like to do things difícil. I write an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hour shows, and I rehearse them to death. I sharpen them. I edit them to death. I feel like I know what's going to work, and then I just jump. So con ropa y todo, I don't even take my clothes off. Me tiro a lo hondo, en lo frío. Sometimes the pool's got barely any water, but right. And then while I'm in there, then I adjust. Mm-hmm. And then the show, you know, gets better as it goes along. But I don't test it out really. I spend a lot of months writing and then I jump.
Wow, that's brave.
I've written six shows that way.
Wow, that's brave. That's brave. I mean, me, I would have to go to an open mic to test it out, like rewrite, yeah. Rearrange. But you pretty much write as you're doing the show.
No, I'll write if, let's say, I'll sit down and I'll write for 6-7 weeks, mm-hmm. and then for the next 7 weeks I'm editing, and then for the next 3 to 4 weeks I'm rehearsing, mm-hmm. and memorizing, and then I just launch it. So in the meantime, maybe I'm saying a few pieces here and there to some people around me, mm-hmm. but I never get in front of a mic and do 10, 20 minutes of it. I just have a feel for what I want to do, and then I have a feel for how it's going. ¿Me entiende? And then, but it's a process that I've gotten used to, right? Mm-hmm. Some people don't work that way. It's just, this is the way I work. If I stopped every 10 minutes to test it, I'd never get done.
Hmm.
You know, I'd be going crazy, because los shows mío, they're not a collection of jokes. My shows are more of a message that I'm trying to convey, and I'm using humor as a vehicle.
I see.
Amen, hallelujah. It's like I'm preaching. So if I have a point to make, I make sure I make it, but along the way, I'm going to make you laugh at it.
All right, but how do you know that? How you know your jokes are going to be well received by the audience? I mean, do you? I think you mentioned that you adjust as you're doing the show live.
There's always an adjustment live.
Right.
There's always, you know, but over time, over the years, over the, you know, doing show after show, the audience helps you develop a voice on stage, a persona.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm writing, I make sure I'm in that persona. And if you do it enough times, you start to anticipate what the audience is not only going to respond to, but what the audience is going to ask for. Okay? So in the beginning, yes, in the beginning, you just need to do like I did. I would do open mics. I would do 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. But once you develop that voice on stage, you should be pretty much good to go on your own.
Right.
You get me?
Right.
You should be pretty much, you should trust your skills enough to write and develop 30, 40, whatever, however long the show that needs to be, essentially a one-man play, since you've already found your voice. The key, though, is to find your voice. Many comedians depend on an audience to tell them if they're funny or not, to tell them if what they're writing is good enough or not, instead of the comedian himself or herself relying on their own intuitions.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to me, you know, I you know, have to test out my material, because when you read it out loud,
yeah.
or when you're doing it out loud, you then hear for yourself what needs to get changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like that's how I did my like anti-Christmas bit. You know, that's you know, it just you know, it like I changed punchlines because, okay, that didn't flow right, but this flowed right and it got a bigger laugh.
Right. But mm-hmm. I would take that a step further and mm-hmm. say, okay, why did it get a bigger laugh? Not, oh, it got a bigger laugh, that means it's good. No, why was it good? And if you can start breaking down what you did, then you can start anticipating how you can recreate something similar in the future.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, take what the audience has given you and see if you can build your own chemistry set so that you can rely on that going forward instead of testing, getting approved. Okay, good. Testing, getting approved. Then you can start anticipating, you know what? This is going to get approved. I don't need to test it. Then, mm-hmm. And then you can create more on your own and risk less, which means you can actually get more done without having to stop, test it. Stop, test it. Stop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So learn more about why the audience is telling you that works. Use that as a learning tool to learn about your own skill. ¿Entiendes?
Yeah.
Instead of always using the audience as a crutch.
Well, what I find that, you know, most jokes like about religion will land if you like I'm not an atheist, but you like if you make fun of religion, since a lot of people that go to comedy shows and open mics are atheist, they just want to laugh because it's counterculture.
Right. Well, you know what? It's good that you bring this up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've thought about this for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, it's. Yeah, I agree. I think it's popular to say, yo no creo en Dios, you know. But I don't believe that. I think that's cheap. And, I you know, I'm religious.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to necessarily go up there and preach or go anti the atheist. But if I believe in something and it's a part of me, it's going to be a part of the show. So in all my shows, there's some religious element to it, but it's not my way of boasting. It's not my way of selling religion. It's my way of demonstrating that it's a part of me, and I'm not ashamed of it. But I think you're right. I think it is easy to bash it, and people get behind it because it's the cool thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's what the cool kids are doing. But that only it's just like using foul language in a comedy show. I'm a clean comic, so that motivates me to speak louder when it's my turn. Mm. Because I'm the exception now. I'm the minority, and I like it. I'm used to that role.
Right.
That's the role we came in when we came from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I'm not used to being part of the cool kid crowd anyway. Mm-hmm. So if the cool kids are making fun of religion, mejor para mí. Then I stand out even easy. I stand out even better. Because when I go up there and I'm proud of being religious, when I make fun of the fact that my family prays all the time, but I use it to my advantage, people receive me more strongly and more faithfully than the person who says, God is fake. What? That's true, man. That don't go nowhere. That don't last. ¿Entiendes? But if I make fun of the way we're religious and I welcome it and I'm accepting of it, people are more loyal to that. They respond more favorably and more strongly than the other comics. Okay. Estoy on fire, bro. I'm telling you right now. It must be what I'm eating, pero I'm on fire.
All right. You
could ask me a physics question.
You just scared the crap out of me just now by doing that. It's like, oh shit, what happened? Oops.
You could ask me a nuclear physics question. I'm on fire. I'll answer. All
right. So, where do you gather your inspiration? And I know you want to cater to cater to people who live in between the English and Spanish worlds, but how do you avoid not being like typecasted or just like, oh, he's a Puerto Rican comedian or he's just gonna talk about Puerto Rican things, and try to like bring in people who are not part of that world, either world?
It's actually not that complicated, you know. When I first started, I thought it would be, you know, very very complex. It really isn't, because my themes are pretty simple. I mean, my themes are family.
Yeah.
You know, my themes are relationships. My themes are career. And those are general themes that apply to all of us across the board. How I express them then becomes a Latino kind of emphasis. But how I express them within the Latino realm is a Puerto Rican type of approach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're Puerto Rican, you go, ese es como mi primo, idéntico a mi primo.
Yeah.
If you're Mexican, you go, we don't necessarily say that word that way, but it has the same flavor. Okay? Mm-hmm. And if you're American, then you go, well, I don't talk like that. I don't sound like that, but I went through the same struggle he did. So, you know, it depends on which filter I get you in. But my themes are broad enough that I'm gonna capture you in one of those filters, if not more. You see, I'm not going in talking about plátano maduro. You know what I mean? I'm talking about how good my mom can cook.
Yeah.
Plátano maduro. But the Irish person or the German person or the Mexican, their mother cooks X dish. Okay? So I'm talking about the fact that they can cook a dish that I can't. That generation wise, there's no connection there. Mm-hmm. So you fill in the plate, but mine happens to be plátano maduro, for example.
Yeah.
So that's a side, you know, issue. So it's not that complicated, and I've been very blessed that other people outside of Puerto Rico have identified with different themes in my show. And that's really what it's about. It's about the theme that I'm trying to get across with a point or message at the end that I'm trying to get across.
All right, so what is the racial makeup of your fan base? I know you have like the Hispanics, obviously, but like other than that, what is like the breakup of your fan base?
I mean, I don't know. I'd have to call the census and have them stand outside the door. But
okay,
I would say, you know, obviously the vast majority are going to be Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of that are going to be Puerto Rican. And bilingual Puerto Ricans,
mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with that. I would never hope to cater to a specific audience. El a quien yo le guste,
yeah,
quien yo le guste, whatever. Because I feel, in my opinion, that who I know best is my own people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that my Puerto Rican community, my bilingual Puerto Rican community, is a crazy community. They're loud. They're dynamic. They're obnoxious, and they're crazy faithful, and I love them. They will hate on you, they will love on you, and then they will tell 20 people to go to your show. And that's who I know. If other people go, I welcome them. I love them with, you know, I love them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really catering to anybody specific. I'm catering to whoever wants to hear my message, my story, and hopefully go back and share it with their family and their friends.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I asked that, and, you know, again, side note, my sister, like, that's how I found out about you, is through my sister. So, you know, you're telling the truth when they're like, your fans will, like, bring other people, and, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, my first thing that I saw of you was the Coquito, and I was like, oh, hell yeah, 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 that's, you know, that spoke to me, you know, as a Puerto Rican myself. But, you know, but as a comedian, like, you know, Do you worry about trying to, like, grow your fan base to, like, other ethnic groups so that way you could be more successful? And damn phone.
That didn't sound like a phone. That sounded like you were pouring yourself a drink.
Oh, no, that's a app that I have on my phone to remind me to drink water.
That's a great app.
Yeah.
That's a great app. You might get that confused with having to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I don't get into that too much, you know, growing my fan base or breaking down the diversity of my fan base. I don't really get into that because I want to be so busy that I don't worry about that. You know, I'm worried about putting enough product out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about, surpassing my last show. I'm worried about, you know, presenting it, performing it in the best way that I can, almost irrespective of who's in the audience. If there's one person in the audience or there's 1,000, I just want to impact that person, whoever that person may be.
All right.
So at the end, if I
see. Yeah, that's really easy because, I mean, I've been told, because I've told, like, jokes, you know, about my family, about my great-granduncle that we had to deport back to Puerto Rico because, you know, when my grandfather passed away and he was, like, the neighborhood drunk. So, you know, he was always bringing trouble, you know, so. But, you know, I tell
him. He was so problematic, he got deported back to Puerto Rico. Do you know how bad you got to be deported to Puerto Rico? Deportation doesn't even apply to Puerto Rico. So if you get deported to Puerto Rico.
Oh, no. It was a citizen's deportation from my grandmother and my mother.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's how bad you got to be. If you're Puerto Rican and you're facing deportation from anybody, you're bad. You're just bad.
Yeah, after because, you know, my uncle, I'll just go into the story and then I'll tell you what people have told me. Like, my uncle, he would stand outside the bodega with his homies, and mm-hmm. he ran out of his SSI check money.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, there was this guy passing by with a dog. He asked my uncle to hold his dog while he went into the bodega. Some other person comes by and says, oh, qué lindo de su perro. And he sold the dog. The guy comes up, beats him up, and, you know, and then I'm coming home from school. I see him getting loaded into an ambulance because he got beat up that bad. I'm like, Theo, what happened? He's like, mijo, that dude didn't make me spill a drop. But nice. Yeah, but and this dude was in a wheelchair.
but your tío kept the money.
Well, yeah, he kept the money.
Ah, viste, claro, fácil, viste. It's part of mira, it's part of the thinking.
Yeah.
He took a beating, kept the money, had to use the money for the hospital bill. Pero está bien.
Oh no, he had that gut. He, you know, he was getting SSI because he sued the city because he broke his leg and he refused to get it fixed, so he could continue getting money.
Ay, Dios mío, Jesús.
So you
sent him to Puerto Rico so he can work the system over there.
Well, no, because my grandmother got tired of him like getting into trouble and people coming in and breaking the building, like smashing windows, smashing the door because he owed people money here.
Eso es lo que nosotros decimos, el orgullo de la familia.
Yeah.
Siempre hay uno.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she just had enough because he, you know, he didn't want to go to the doctor to have his leg fixed because, you know.
Bro, I've had enough. I'm ready to call encima.
Yeah. But no, he passed away, but unfortunately.
Oh, great. Now you tell me that. After I said that, really? Now you tell me that? Maybe you should have started that, you know, part of your story.
No, because I like to catch people like that. Like, catch him in my trap.
He's dead.
He's dead.
Oh, okay, great.
Well,
okay.
I gotta go
to church tomorrow anyway.
You beat him down in spirit.
That's no great. Thanks. Thank you. Make me feel better.
Look, you know. But the only problem is we couldn't bury him because he was such a drunk. To put him in the ground.
Oh my god.
To put him in the ground, he would be toxic waste.
Oh no, that's a joke. Actually,
okay. Yeah, it is.
You gotta work on that. I think your uncle's influencing you.
Yeah, I made some coquito, used your recipe. I'm fucked up. I mean, I'm faded. No. So who are your, like, were you influenced? Who did you look up to? Who are your comedic heroes?
See, it's hard because you know, I'm a clean comic, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I consider myself very physical. So any comedian that would either, you know, could tell a story clean, you know, like, let's say, for example, Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Crystal, when he would do his one-man shows, was remarkable. You know, or physical comedians like Martin Lawrence was very physical.
Mm-hmm.
comedians who talked about uncomfortable truths like mm-hmm. Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sinbad that could perform for anybody. So I would take pieces from all these comedians and I would kind of, you know, find my own style, because my style no existe. You know, I could be on stage and go English, Spanish, English. There's a lot of music in my shows and I'm very physical.
Mm-hmm.
So my style, it would be akin to this guy and that guy and that, you know. So I hoped that I'm a blend, really, right? Because we're mutts, right? We're a blend of different cultures here anyway. So my style, luckily, and I'm blessed for it,
actually, even
is a reflection of that same type of blending action, you know?
I hear you. So how did you develop your voice? Like, how did you develop, like, your comedic personality?
I was very lucky. I started out with my first show in Florida. And I moved to Chicago. I worked with a producer out there, Michael Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
And he started producing some of my shows over there. And that audience is the one that helped me discover my voice, helped me discover my persona. I owe a lot to the city of Chicago for that. Mm-hmm. Because once I found it, then I was off and running. But they were the ones that helped me discover it. And it is, everybody has it. It's in you. You just have to not only discover it, but then have the courage and the confidence to develop it and not switch and keep switching. But it's, you know, it's like finding it and going, esta es, esto soy yo, this is me, here we go, ¿entiendes? And then nurture it, develop it, and show it some faith.
Okay. What made you want to do like clean comedy? Because I mean, there's a lot of comedians that they do both. They'll have like a stage show where they'll just get like, I wouldn't say dirty, like, because I wouldn't consider myself dirty. I like going blue, offensive, like smack you in the face with my own truth.
Right.
But what made you want, like, is it for business reasons, or is it a challenge, or, you know, is it, like, because you're inside, you know, you're a clean person.
Inside, I'm a clean person. Yeah. I haven't checked.
Okay.
I've always loved entertaining my family.
Mm-hmm.
And mi familia, my family is very religious.
Yeah.
So if you were going to be the center of attention in my family and you were going to make them laugh, you couldn't use foul language.
Right.
So it's the way I came up. I can use foul language in my own private life.
Mm-hmm.
But when trying to make my family laugh, which is the best feeling for me, that has to be in a certain way, in a certain clean way. So para mí, anytime I look to perform, it's like performing in front of my family. So my audience is really just a bigger version of my family. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I think there's a great satisfaction out of seeing your audience comprise of an 88-year-old, a 48-year-old, you know, and an 8-year-old. and so financially, as a third reason, there's more money in that.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're a blue comic, you're hoping for the mom and the dad to come out and buy a few drinks. You're not getting a cut of those drinks. You're just getting their ticket. But as me, I'm hoping mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, you know, brother, sister, you know, I'm hoping, you know, they all come out. And so I'm making, you know, 2, 4, 6 times what you're making, simply because I'm appealing to the family. So and as a fourth reason, mm-hmm. hace falta. We need more family type entertainment that we just don't. When's the last stand up comedy show that you know that a family could go to and enjoy? I wish that there were more out there, but there isn't. So that motivates me to keep writing, to keep producing.
Right.
Because our families deserve to go and hang out together and kind of laugh together and go home and keep laughing and keep making fun of their own versions of what I said. ¿Entiende?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because my personal influence are Bill Hicks, who has this amazing bit about marketing. Like, I don't know if you've seen that bit. You know, he's talking about a woman, you know, playing with herself, and the camera pulls back, buy Coke. And, you know, that's a powerful message on how, you know, how the marketing just messes with us. And I can't, you know, and he's telling the truth, and that still holds up. I mean, he's done clean comedy for, you know, when he was on David Letterman. But, you know, a lot of his stuff is blue, and it holds up. He's in fact, Richard Pryor, I mean, that bit where he lit himself on fire is one of the funniest bits, and he talks about how his mother was a prostitute and how he grew up, and that could get pretty
right. But the issue, mm-hmm. if we're going to talk about specifically about Richard Pryor, you know, language is an expression, foul language is oftentimes an expression of an emotion.
Yes.
Of an attitude.
Yes.
So professional comedians, say for example, Richard Pryor, could easily do that bit or can easily tell that story without using the foul language. They use it to accentuate an emotion or an attitude.
Right.
So it's almost like a surgeon uses a tool. The problem is that most times people use that as a crutch.
Mm.
And they say the F word to get a laugh or to accentuate a joke because it's a dead joke.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, language is a powerful tool, and I respect it. There's not one way better or the other. I can argue that my way is better for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there are comedians that I think are hilarious that use foul language, and I love them. I love them, but it's just not my style, right? It's like trying to write left-handed. I can do it. It's ugly, but it's not natural for me. It doesn't flow.
Mm-hmm.
Just like some comedians just can't get the foul language out of their head because they literally use that to walk. It's their crutch. But a smart comedian, like you said, maybe they can do both, can say, no, you know what? I can remove the words because all I can do is I just use that word to remind me of the emotion that I'm trying to feel.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can sell them on the emotion, then I can sell them on the joke, which is why stand-up, the part that is often overlooked in stand-up comedy, is the acting part. You got to be a good actor because you got to be able to sell that joke visually, physically. And again, there are some comedians that are just all wordy and it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not really my style. I can't really relate to that, right? That's like trying to understand German. But a good comedian knows both how to act and how to tell a joke. You know, and again, Richard Pryor, Martin Lawrence, you know, Billy Crystal, fascinating individuals for that because they take you into their world and you see it. You see it. And that's magic for me. That's kind of who I try to aspire to be in a way when I'm on stage.
Okay. Oh, goodness. I can't believe I just ran out of questions. Well, you do have a show. You do have a show coming up January 31st at the Orlando Repertory Theater in Orlando, Florida, January 31st.
And February 1st.
And February 1st. What did you do to Oh, you're was oh wait, what oh, let me ask this first. So what part of New York are you from?
White Plains, New York. It's about 20 minutes north of the Bronx.
Oh, that's upstate.
Ain't upstate.
That's upstate. We can nah. That's upstate.
Expand your horizon.
That's like
that's upstate Albany's in Canada, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
It might as well be. Like anything in Westchester County, that's upstate.
That ain't even right.
In fact, Yonkers doesn't exist. It's Westchester County.
Wow. Just because we're civilized up there, that don't mean we get treated differently.
What? You get more of the taxes. Your teachers get paid more.
Yep.
Oh, and also, I'm No Romeo. You have a show coming up on Valentine's Day.
I got my all-Spanish show, Capicu, January 31st and February 1st at the Orlando Repertory Theater. Mm-hmm. All this information can be found on LEcastro.com. And then on Valentine's, we're doing a comedy concert with the singer Johnny Rivera from Puerto Rico. And he's going to be performing on stage with me February 14th in Chicago. Again, LEcastro.com.
Yeah, at the Copernicus Theater in Chirac.
Chirac? What are you talking about, bro?
That's what they call it, is Chirac.
Who's they? Who, you talking to the wrong day?
Oh, okay.
Is that your Theo talking to you again?
From
the other side?
Yeah, I, you know, what the Mercado, he called me, you know.
Yeah. What the Mercado is alive. Oh, you're saying he called you to channel your uncle?
Yeah, pretty much.
If Walter Mercado can channel your uncle, then he's got some powers, bro.
Yeah, well, yeah. Like everyone, like the whole world stops for Walter Mercado.
Walter Mercado is the man.
He's too pretty.
Or the woman. One of those two. Either way, he is the human being to be reckoned with.
When I first saw him when I was young, it was like, I hear this deep voice coming out of a woman's face. I freaked out. Like, yo, what's going on? Oh, no, he's a man. I'm like, what?
But no, people freak out because he's actually 224 years old.
Yeah.
People don't know that. No, people don't know that. No, he's 224 years old.
Yeah, but his girlfriend is 24.
Absolutely right. Yes.
That's what messes me up because I'm 31. I can't get a 24-year-old.
Yeah, you can. You can get a 24-year-old friend. That's what you can get.
Yeah, a 24-year-old. Yeah. I am now the proud owner of a fully loaded 2014 Friend Zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lucky guy. You're a lucky guy.
Yeah, you know. I'm still making payments. I pay the cell phone bill. She needs $10 here and there, you know.
Yeah, there's a word for a friend like you in Puerto Rico. It rhymes with conejo.
Oh, pendejo. Pendejo. I was like, yeah.
Que conejo, nah. Tú pagaste los biles de ella.
Actually, if you want to take it old school, I could be called on my mouth, like, real quick.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I wouldn't argue against it.
Take it old school. Like, I still laugh when my uncles say that, like, because no one says that no more.
Unless you are one.
Yeah. So, So where you grew up in White Plains, so I mean, did you go to the city, or I mean, when you first started out, like
No, I went to high school and college in New York, but then I went to Florida for law school, And that's where I started kind of writing and performing, was in Orlando, before going to Chicago and kind of doing it more full time. I went back to the city a couple of years ago, performed off Broadway as part of the solo festival, and I won best stand up for that festival. But it's just a matter of staying busy and hitting enough markets. Connecticut as well is a great city. Bridgeport,
really?
Give it up for Bridgeport. It's a big city, beautiful community up there. Indiana, Florida. We're hoping to do Texas this year. But you know, just kind of, you know, bringing the show to the people. You know, because what we do is just not really. There's no home base for it. So you know, wherever we're at, we're just always looking to expand. You know.
Where would you consider your like where most of your fans are? Is Chicago, Orlando, New York?
Well, right now Chicago, because I've done the most years in Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, but hopefully we can, like I said, we can change that. And we, I have a great fan base, like I said, in Connecticut. I have a great fan base in upstate New York. I have a great fan base in Orlando. You know, we just keep growing. I don't want to get comfortable in one place. I want to take it to the people. I want to go. I want to travel. I want to go to Hawaii. We got a great community out in Hawaii. Why not? I want to go to Puerto Rico, you know, and do a show for all my haters over there.
Oh, yeah, haters?
They're waiting for me, bro. They're waiting for me.
They're people hating on you in PR?
I don't know. That's in our nature. It's in our blood, bro. We're natural haters, bro. As soon as I get on stage, they'll be like, ah, mira como camina. Ah, they think when I come, go. They're waiting for me, I'm ready for them. I'm ready.
Getting ready to throw canepas.
Not even that. Esto no vale la pena. Yo no voy a desperdiciar las canepas en este tipo.
No, he's not even good enough to waste a canepa.
No vale la pena. Esta canepa, mira, la rica.
Yeah, I know, right? This is delicious. He's not.
No vale la pena.
And it'll be a fat fuck like me. Be like, nah, I ain't wasting no food. We need to throw it at him. Shoot. I'm not throwing this tomato at him. I gotta make some sofrito. What you talking about? So have you done a video making sofrito? Because I see you did tostones 101, chuleta.
Yeah, we did tostones, chuletas, and coquito 101. Mm-hmm. And then we've done a couple of other videos, just kind of calling, prank calling, and stuff like that. Just having fun. You know, I mean, just You know,
I do prank calls too. I love
it.
That's what got me started, because I've done this podcast before I started doing stand up.
Okay.
Yeah, like a lot of people just like, oh, play. Is there anyone around you? Any young children around you?
Because you asking that now after you've been talking the way you talk. Yeah, it's a little late for that, bro.
Yeah, I know. No, I called this Mexican restaurant as a white guy. I said, "Do you serve jugo de mamao?" And they're like, "What?
Qué wey, órale, pero dime de qué jugo de qué?"
You mean mame? No, jugo de mamao.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah. So it's in fact, can I play one of your videos?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here's the Made in Puerto Rico promo clip. Just check them out. Go to youtube.com/Eli Zaldi.
Actually, or just elicastro.com. All my clips are out there.
Oh, well, there you go. See, I'm trying to make it hard for people.
Yeah, and I'm trying to make it easy. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Ah, damn, I'm a hater.
I'm used to it.
A tiny frog so native to the island that if you take it away from Puerto Rico, it dies. It gets its name from the sound it makes at night, right? We got a stuttering coquille. Well, that's rare, bro. Save yourself. But that's our symbol, right? That's like the eagle is a symbol of the United States, right? But how do you always see the eagle? Don't you always see the eagle like flying in the sky, right? With its wings spread out, right? Majestic. Or he'll be perched on a branch, right? With his chest out, right? All proud. And the eagle always looks mad, don't he? He's like... Be like, yeah! I would go to battle for that eagle, right? How do we show off our cookie? We stand that frog up. We put a big baba on him. Right? With a little white tank top, right? It's always like two sizes too small because his guppy's sticking out. Little belly button showing. You didn't know frogs had belly buttons, right? Coquis do. Little cut off jean shorts and with chancletas. You know? And the coquis always tired, right? Because we always got to land down on a maca. Just... And then we gotta make up the party cookie, right? We'll put a drink in his hand. Always looks like he's had one drink too many. Mi orgullo.
All right. Again, check him out. That go to EliCastro.com. Check out all his clips. Okay, well, like as a lawyer, what do you think about what's going on with all this police brutality, like with Eric Garner, with Michael Brown? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Have you spoken about that? I can't hear a word you're saying.
How about now?
Okay, now.
Yeah, I don't talk about that. You know, that's not really my. I don't really create a forum for that. But I'm well aware of it. You know, what I would say is, you know, there's bad people everywhere. You know, there's bad criminals. There's good criminals. There's good cops. There's bad cops. I think it's a flaw to group Garner and Brown together. I think those are two completely different cases. For example. I thought the grand jury should have indicted on the Garner case, and they didn't. So maybe I'm missing something, right? We don't all know everything, so that leads me to believe that maybe I'm missing an important piece of information. It was tragic what happened to Officer Ramos and his partner in Brooklyn. That's just devastating, and it's more devastating that something like that would spark anger amongst New Yorkers in terms of the mayor and the police commissioner and all this political dispute, when at the heart of it I wanted to know more about those officers, right? I wanted to know more about Officer Ramos and his 13-year-old son, and I thought, you know, more attention should have been paid to them, because, you know, we lost two unsung heroes, you know what I mean? And instead, we had to listen to political discourse and fights and all that. So we live in a very depressing time, very tragic. And I think that laughter is at a premium.
Oh, yeah.
We often overlook it. And then when we enjoy it, we wish we had more of it.
Do you think, I mean, you are a prosecutor, so do you think that, you know, Latinos, blacks are constantly messed over?
Well, yeah, and I can speak more for Latinos, right? Because the problem with Latinos is that we face a double barrier. Mm-hmm. A dark-skinned Latino who doesn't speak very much English is already, you know, down two strikes. So when the police force is not representative of the community it polices, mm-hmm. now you got three strikes, you're out, right? So oftentimes, you know, let's say a Mexican immigrant, you know, is easy target. You know, when he comes out of a bar, that's an easy traffic stop. And he's not going to be able to represent himself well at the traffic stop. Oftentimes, he's not going to have enough money to hire a private attorney. He's going to be given a public defender who is not going to speak his language, who won't represent him well, and then it goes on and on and on. He may plead guilty to something he very well did not, you know, do. So it all starts at that street level, right? So if we had more of us at the police level, or more of us at the prosecutorial level, or more of us at the bench as judges, then we have a better shot of equalizing a lot of the wrongs that are going on every single day because of, in my opinion, language. Mm-hmm. Language is a big, big problem. And when you couple that with race or color of your skin, you know, you're done. You're done. You're absolutely done.
Right. I mean, playing devil's advocate, from what I've heard people make the argument, if they want to be treated better, how come they don't just learn the English language?
The people who, whoever says that,
yeah,
you just turn around and go, how many languages you know? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, just one. Well, why don't you go and start and learn German? Okay? Go learn Russian. And tell me how easy that is.
Well, I'm not in Russia. I'm not in Germany.
Just learn the language. Mm-hmm. Just try and learn to say two sentences. Mm-hmm. You understand? It's a very difficult thing to have to. And the fact is that most of us end up picking that second language. So, you know, you overlook it. But knowing two languages is a huge advantage. And soon, we're going to be the majority. So if you only know English, for example, and you live in America, and you don't know Spanish, you done, son. Mm-hmm. You get me? You're the minority. You better start learning Spanish because you live in America. You understand? So, yeah, you don't want to learn German and Russian to prove my point? Then learn Spanish. Okay, Baba? And you're probably going to be learning it from me because I'm going to be teaching you because I'm going to be speaking in Spanish to you very soon. You get me? So, you know, we need to get past this whole learn English thing and be treated equally. How about, you know, you treat me equally regardless of the language I speak? Yandere, brother. I'm running for office, bro. I'm running for office. I'm on fire.
Yes, you. Would you run as a Democrat or independent? Democrat, Republican?
I would run as Puerto Rican. Okay? I would run as a Lucille. Okay? I would run como que me dé la gana. I'd be Democrat one day, Republican the next, because it's how it, whatever.
All right.
Libertarian, and then I would go independent, and then I would go PNP, and then I would go estadista, and then I would go PIP, lo que sea.
All right. Yeah. In fact, I'll fly under the Coqui flag. I don't care.
That's right. The party of the Coqui.
Start every...
Para mí y para ti.
Start every debate with it. Yeah.
That's it. That's our slogan. El partido del coquí para mí y para ti.
Yep, that's right. Let's do this. So, oh, wow. Wow, damn, an hour just went past quick, huh?
I gotta go, brother. My phone's running out of battery.
Oh. Oh, you're on your phone? Oh, I guess so.
What'd you think I was gonna be? We walkie-talkies?
I thought laptop. I'm on my laptop. I'm running. Yeah,
you're a lot smarter than I am. I just use my phone.
I got my mixer here. I got
my mini laptop called my iPhone.
Ah, that's why you gotta get an external battery.
Oh, maybe you should pay me for this interview and I could afford it.
Ah, well, if I start getting paid, been doing this 8 years for free, I'm a jerk.
I'm gonna hold you to that. I'm gonna come get you when I find out you're getting paid.
You know how many people will come get me when they start getting paid? Like, remember when I was on your show?
I don't worry about that. I don't do lines. Just remember, I'm gonna be there.
All right, I'll be the one ducking. So all right. So that's EliCastro.com.
Bro, it's EliCastro.com. If you were blanquito, I'd be like, you know what, I let it pass.
Yeah.
Pero papá, come on. I mean, I got my family going, ¿qué está diciendo de que Eli? Ese muchacho se llama Eli Castro.
My bad. From Elicatro.com. And I say the Catro with the fucking accent like I'm about something.
Elicatro.com. Just can go to Elicatro.com. All of a sudden, I don't know why when you have to speak Spanish, you sound like you barely know how to speak English. Because this is how I speak English when I'm trying to speak Spanish.
I'm a jerk. Don't worry about it. So from there, you could follow him on his Facebook, his Twitter, his Instagram, and his LinkedIn in case you need him to endorse you for, Patelio Maker, if you're trying to get.
See, there you go again. Patelio, Elicastro.com, Patelio. It's like you have your own different, when you speak, try to speak Spanish, it's like a different person. You be like chilling like this. You talk normal, and then you be like, "Yo, check it." So you can make some pataleo, and then you can go to helicopter.com, and then you know, you can make it happen once we eat some pataleo and empanada.
Yeah. Oh well.
That's awesome. That's what I'm saying. That's your own character. You developing that voice. It just changes quite a bit when you try to speak Spanish.
Yeah, you should hear me speak. Try to speak Polish.
Oh, that's for another podcast.
Dzień dobry, jak się masz, dziękuję, and then I start laying bricks. I don't know.
That sounded like you were trying to say pastelillos.
Pastelillo.
Helicatro.com. Pastelillo.
I can't. Yeah. See, that's what see my family makes fun of the way I speak Spanish because I like since English is my first language. Yeah, I'm trying to learn now.
And Spanish is your eighth.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I could say hello to a Japanese person with no fucking accent, and... Oops. Any children around there? I just said the F word like 10
times. I don't understand why you're asking an hour after the fact. You've been dropping the F-bomb like, you know, it's popcorn at a movie theater.
Well, you know, the delicious, you know?
Just like pateleos. They're very delicious. They're delicioso.
Hey, wait, I can say paparriana. There you go.
There you go. Papa Riena. What? I don't even know what that sounded like.
Riena.
Papa Riena, look, I can roll my R's.
Yeah.
Papa Riena, very delicioso.
Yeah, I'm the only one in my family that can roll my R's, but I can't speak. I can barely speak Spanish. It's atrocious. I know.
Just sit there going. That's it. That's all you should say.
Oh, when I was a little kid, I thought speaking Spanish was basically speaking English with a fake Spanish accent.
That's pretty much how you're doing it now.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much. Bro. Yeah. I'm. It's horrible.
You've come a very short way.
Yeah. Yeah, but I try hard.
That's all that matters.
It's the thought that counts. Like
you just want the E for effort, right? Pinned on your shirt.
Like yeah, pretty much. When I'm in New York City and a Spanish person comes up to me, a Spanish tourist comes up to me, and starts talking to me in Spanish, and asks for directions, I just start running.
Yeah. Yeah, and they go, okay, let's, vamos a seguirlos. Él nos va a enseñar, vamos a seguirlos. Él va a estar corriendo, vamos, seguirlos.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I'm trying to get away from you. No, demuéstranos, enséñanos dónde está el sitio.
And then they start judging you. What, you don't speak Spanish, but you're Hispanic.
Yeah.
That's your
cross to bear, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, just give me a crown of thorns and I'll...
You went there, bro. Too soon, bro. It's only been 2,000 years. Too soon.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Hold on. That's just me jabbing my finger in my open wound on the side. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for coming on. You're welcome to come on anytime. Be like, mira pendejo, let me on. And I'm like, okay. I'll do it.
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate the invite.
Yeah. So again, Eli.
Ay, Dios mío. ¿Tú ves lo que yo te digo? ¿Tú ves? Es que tipo no sabe. Como que it goes in one ear y se sale por la boca, como un, just vomitando.
And you call yourself Bruto.
See, I know. We speak the Bruto language. Yeah. One Bruto knows another.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, yeah, he's calling himself Bruto. He don't know.
Elicastro.com.
I got my black belt in Brutoness.
Yep. Okay, Master Bruto, it's been a pleasure.
Konnichiwa. Domo arigato.
Nos vemos. Dios te bendiga.
Alrighty. So, yeah, that's been the Crotch Out Radio Show. And as always, from my house to your house, mahalo.
That's the end of my show. Dog.